This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
British Prime Minister Theresa May wrapped up a three-day country tour of Africa with a visit Thursday to Kenya. May's trip is aimed at improving Britain's economic ties to the continent before her country's departure from the European Union next year.
That's Mohammed Yusuf reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's president reappoints his two deputies to help him deliver his election promises in his new five-year term. German Chancellor Angela Merkel kicks off a three-nation Africa visit with a push to reduce illegal migration. And Rwanda's government and the UN Refugee Agency today begin issuing national refugee identification cards in Kigali. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. This morning, Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, reappointed his two deputies to help him deliver his election promises in his new five-year term. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinovashi has details.
Retired General Constantino Chiwenga is one of the deputies that were reappointed by Mnangagwa today. He took his oath of office before Justice Luke Malaba this morning.
I, Constantino Kuvea Dominic Nyigazino Chiwenga, swear that as Vice President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, I will be faithful to Zimbabwe and will obey, uphold, and defend the Constitution and all other laws of Zimbabwe, and that I will promote whatever will advance and oppose whatever may harm Zimbabwe.
Chiwenga led the army last year when it forced out President Robert Mugabe, who had led Zimbabwe for 37 years and placed Mnangagwa in office. Kembo Mohadi, who also served as vice president under Mnangagwa after Mugabe's ouster, also was sworn in Thursday. Nick Mangwana is the ZANU-PF chairman for the UK chapter. He looks ahead.
What's next is Parliament has to be sworn in. The President has to announce his pickings for members of his cabinet. What will follow again is the shifting in movement, including recruitment of new permanent secretaries to replace those who have reached the pensionable age and who are leaving.
Mangwana says then some new ambassadors will go out to replace some of the diplomats who returned home before the July 30th polls. Some critics have been skeptical that Mnangagwa and his party will appoint any new individuals to the cabinet. Mangwana, however, says there is a high likelihood there will be new and younger faces.
We've got a young population, and definitely the cabinet and every facet of our economy and establishment should reflect that reality.
Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers political developments. He says not much will change.
It's the same team, two vice presidents. Nothing has changed, really, except the realization that nothing has changed. This will largely influence what we will likely see with the cabinet, that nothing has changed.
The appointment of cabinet ministers and opening of parliament will be delayed as President Mnangagwa leaves for Beijing Friday for the China-Africa summit. Some members of the opposition worry that over the next 5 years, ZANU-PF will be able to use its two-thirds majority in parliament to amend the constitution. Several ZANU-PF leaders have already indicated they favor raising the minimum age for the president to 55, which would block the leader of the main opposition group, the MDC Alliance, from running for president for years. The man, Nelson Chamisa, is 40 years old. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashe from Harare.
Members of South Sudan's SPLM-IO and other opposition parties just a few hours ago signed an agreement to end the country's five-year-old civil war. They spent much of today in talks with a Sudanese mediation team in Khartoum. Rebel leader Riek Machar and other opposition leaders worked out a draft of their reservations and conditions to be handed over to the IGAD mediators before they agreed to sign the deal. Earlier this week, representatives of South Sudan President Salva Kiir's government and some of the other warring parties signed the deal. Machar supporters, however, held out over concerns about the number of states and the transitional constitution. Today's agreement settles issues of governance and power sharing during the transitional period, which will last for 3 years. British Prime Minister Theresa May wrapped up a three-country tour of Africa with a visit today to Kenya. May's trip is aimed at improving Britain's economic ties to the continent before her country's departure from the EU next year. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Theresa May is the first British leader to set foot in Kenya, a former British colony since Margaret Thatcher in 1988. In Nairobi Thursday, May pledged to build stronger economic and trade ties with the East African nation.
So as Britain prepares to leave the European Union, we're committed to a smooth transition that ensures continuity in our trading relationship with Kenya, ensuring Kenya retains its duty-free, quota-free access to the UK market, and to building on our strong trade and investment ties to create even more opportunities for our businesses and for our consumers.
May met with President Uhuru Kenyatta at State House to discuss how the two countries can work together on issues of trade and investment, as well as building stability and fighting terrorism in East Africa. Earlier in her trip, May pledged $5.2 billion to support African economies. Kenya is hungry for that kind of foreign investment, which can provide employment and opportunities to its growing population. The head of the Africa Policy Institute, Peter Kagwanja, says Kenya offers huge opportunities to British companies.
I think Britain wants good relations with Kenya as well as a market, an expanding market. Kenya is now almost 50 million people. It is tapping into a larger market of about 250 million people from the Great Lakes to South Sudan to southern Ethiopia to northern Tanzania, and so on. So it's a huge market. It's an epicenter of a huge market in Eastern Africa. And Britain would like to be a competitor in that.
Gerishoni Kiara is an international economic affairs lecturer at the University of Nairobi. He says Britain and Africa need each other.
So therefore, it is to the advantage of both the UK and the African countries to understand each other and see which side of the brain is battered for us. How can we have a win-win situation?
May's visit to Kenya wrapped up a three-day trip that included stops in Nigeria and South Africa. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel has kicked off a three-nation Africa visit with a push to reduce illegal migration from the continent by tackling the reasons that people leave. After arriving late yesterday in Senegal, Merkel said the goal is to fight illegal immigration, especially the human traffickers who take advantage of migrants, and to help create jobs through economic investment. That also would help undercut one of the prime causes of extremism and unrest among the young populations across Africa who have high unemployment rates. The flood of illegal immigrants has eased some this year, but it remains a major concern across Europe. Italy, which has been the primary first stop after the risky trip across the Mediterranean, has resisted taking any more. There have been calls for other countries to share the burden, but little consensus on how to do that. Merkel also will visit Ghana and Nigeria. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa reappoints his two deputies to help him deliver his election promises in his new five-year term. British Prime Minister Theresa May wraps up a three-country tour of Africa with a visit to Kenya. And German Chancellor Angela Merkel kicks off a three-nation Africa visit with a push to reduce illegal migration. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Rwanda's government and the UN Refugee Agency today begin issuing national refugee identification cards in Kigali. The UNHCR says these ID cards will help more than 172,000 refugees move freely and work instead of relying only on food assistance. Daniela Ayanita is the UNHCR External Relations Officer in Rwanda. She spoke with reporter Eugene Uimana about the program.
So the current exercise, which is taking place now in Kigali, will affect some 2,700 people residing in Kigali and the neighborhoods. However, the objective is to provide these national refugee ID cards to the rest of the refugee population. We are first starting in urban areas, as we did for the verification exercise. So from Kigali, we'll probably go to Huye, and then we'll continue with the camps. So now the objective is also to continue the rollout of the verification process in the rest of the camps, like Ziba and Mahama. Mahama is due actually to take place in the first quarter of next year.
How will the verification process work, and how long will it take?
The verification exercise was more to have a clear idea now, a few years after they arrived here, to know their status, to know their address. If they have specific needs, the size of their families, etc. So it's more to better know them and to know that they are still living here in Rwanda.
And how do you do that?
We have teams together. We work together with NIDA. UNHCR works together with NIDA and the immigration, and we have teams roving in the country, spending 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on the size of the camp. And this is all done manually. It's also through biometrics. We aim at finishing the whole process by the first quarter of next year.
The Rwanda government say the card will help refugees with access to different public and private services, employability, and to move more freely in the country. Can you explain this more clearly and give us some examples?
So this national identity, refugee identity card, will enable refugees to be considered for the national health system. You know that there are some categorizations. So thanks to the criteria which is already in place for the Rwandan population, we will be able to apply the same together. When I say we, it's UNHCR and the government of Rwanda. We plan to use the same methods. So to help refugees and ensure that they have a health coverage. Now this applies to education services as well, where we want the refugee children to be enrolled in national schools, in both primary and secondary school. This card will definitely enhance their employability, but of course we need to look at the skills of the refugees and how to enhance the skills and to provide them opportunities to enhance the skills. Mm.
You also say they will be able to move freely.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
We expect that once we will have also this readable machine for travel documents, they will be able to go outside of Rwanda, to cross borders.
That was Daniela Ayanita with UNHCR. She was speaking with Eugene Uimana in Kigali. Algerian health authorities claim the situation is under control after a cholera epidemic in at least 4 provinces caused more than 60 confirmed cases of the disease and killed at least 3 people. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Residents in a village of Tipaza province are drinking water from a spring government officials claim is infected with the cholera virus. But residents protest the spring is safe to drink from and the government analysis is mistaken. A cholera outbreak has been confirmed in Tipaza, Blida, Algiers, and Buira provinces. More than 130 people have been hospitalized with suspected cases of cholera this month, and more than 60 cases were confirmed. At least 3 people have died, according to Algerian media. Algeria's health minister, Dr. Mokhtar Hezblaoui, recently said health officials have been doing their best to keep on top of the situation. He says since the disease was discovered, the health ministry has devised a strategy to come to grips with it and to stop it from spreading. Dr. Issam Eddine Bouyoussef of the El Hadi Fliki Hospital Center, which treats infectious diseases in Algiers, told Al Hora TV hundreds of people have come to the hospital fearing they were suffering from cholera. He says patients must be quarantined and the disease isolated. He stresses his hospital has set up a specialized and isolated wing to treat patients while they recover once the disease has been confirmed. Bouyoussef says many people have been panicking, mistaking stomach ailments for cholera. Local media report consumers are buying up large quantities of mineral water. An old man who lives in the capital, Algiers, tells Al Hora TV he is afraid. He says, cholera is dangerous to me because it has killed and sickened a number of people, and he thinks that a large number of people who live in the area have been hit. Dr. Mohamed Gamari complained to a local TV station the media uncovered the cholera epidemic before the government did. He said doctors in Khazruna, where the disease was first detected, should have sounded the alarm when they noticed the unusual number of diarrhea cases. Pharmacies in Algiers have been selling large quantities of salts to treat diarrhea, while many people have been avoiding fruits and vegetables, which they fear may be contaminated by the cholera virus. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry and his Sudanese counterpart El Derderi Ahmed discussed this week their strategic partnership. It includes more than 20 agreements that are set to be signed by Egyptian and Sudanese presidents in October. The two ministers focused also on counterterrorism across borders and the security of the Red Sea. Nabil Nagam is an Egyptian political analyst. He explained to VOA's Mohammed Elshenawi the importance of bilateral cooperation for achieving Egypt's national security goals.
It is important is not the word. It is a vital because the Sudanese, Egyptian, western and eastern borders go all the way to almost 2,500 kilometers. In the west, The troubled state of Libya and the activities of the right-wing militias, which they call themselves Al-Qaeda in North Africa, all that chaos in the West is a quite security alarm. So the cooperation between Cairo and Khartoum in that level is quite vital. It is a matter of national security for both countries. Khartoum should cooperate with Cairo on that level, the national security of both countries, because the threats from the Western front coming from Libya, coming from the sub-Sahara militias is quite a big danger, actually. In the other hand, the Red Sea, the trouble in Yemen and the war between the legitimate government and the militias of Al-Houthi, it's clear to everybody that some regional powers are involved in that conflict in Yemen, so Sudan and Egypt can provide some stability factors to that front.
So what role can Sudan play in facilitating a breakthrough in the stalled negotiations concerning the Ethiopian Renaissance Dam?
I don't think Cairo is going to capitalize too much on that. The relation between Cairo and Addis has witnessed dramatic changes for the last 6 months. And I believe very much that Cairo is quite satisfied with that progress in the bilateral relation between Cairo and Addis. When the young Ethiopian prime minister visited Cairo, it was clear that the chemistry and the common understanding between the two leaders is quite force power for the relation between Cairo and Addis. And I believe very much that a new chapter in the relation between Cairo and Ethiopia has been started since the meeting between Mr. Sisi and Abiy Ahmed and the Sudanese president in Addis first half of this year.
But there is still technical problems that is not being solved.
Obviously there is. And I believe very much that Cairo is quite concerned with the Renaissance Dam, because Egypt is getting 90% of its water supplies from the Nile. And Dahba Dam is built on the Blue Nile, obviously will affect the supplies of the water to its 103 million population. So, first of all, there are some concerns regarding the engineering or the design of the dam itself. The second concern is regarding the filling the artificial lake behind the dam. And obviously, you cannot ignore the press conference last Saturday of the Ethiopian Prime Minister when he said that the Ethiopian company, which belongs to the Ministry of Defense, has failed to fulfill its commitments regarding the dam. So Addis Ababa is having some quite serious obstacles in the way to complete the dam. Cairo, from its end, is building positive bridges with Addis Ababa, and I believe very much that things are going in the right direction at last.
That was Nabil Nagim, an Egyptian political analyst. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, pressure mounts on Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni over the beating and detention of music star Bobi Wine. And we'll discuss the legacy of Kofi Annan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Childhood cancers are highly curable, with long-term survival rates as much as 80%. But for pediatric cancer patients living in refugee camps, access to care is a daunting prospect. On Press Conference USA, we'll speak with two doctors from St. Jude Children's Research Hospital about their global efforts to continue care for displaced pediatric cancer patients. Listen to us Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA, only on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.